Today on Jay Sekulow Live, are we on the brink of war with Iran?
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Yesterday, U.S. CENTCOM, Central Command, issued another statement saying that the threat remained credible and that it remained imminent. Now, as the USS Abraham Lincoln Strike Group continues to move towards the Persian Gulf in response to that threat, the Iranian ambassador to the U.K. said the move was a serious miscalculation and accused the U.S. of playing a very dangerous game, claiming it was trying to drag Iran into an unnecessary war.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Other countries are also reacting to this new Iranian threat. Just in the last day, the German government has suspended training of Iraqi soldiers. The Netherlands has quickly closed its mission in Iraq. The British government has opened a special crisis center, while the oil giant Exxon has announced it's withdrawing all U.S. employees from Basra. And U.S. Embassy has withdrawn all of its non-essential staff, too.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
This is a key moment in history. And listen, we all hope that it does not have to end with military conflict, but I think the question has to be asked. When you hear all those news reports together, when you read and wake up this morning to news that the United States State Department has ordered all of their non-essential staff, diplomatic staff, out of Iraq because of what's happening in neighboring Iran and what could potentially happen in neighboring Iran. So we know we have troops in the region in both Iraq and Syria. We know we've got a carrier strike group. That is not just one USS aircraft carrier. That is accompanied by seven warships. That also includes submarines. And then you're not even getting into like all the aircraft that is on that aircraft carrier, plus four B-52 bombers that are now in, based out of Qatar. One of our allies, where we've got a base there. And the USS Arlington is joining the strike group. This is a transport vehicle for U.S. Marines, both amphibious and land vehicles, and special operations. Those who go in and do things like place targets electronically now, usually, but still by using manpower to target specific places to hit. So, I mean, it is building up. The forces are not there, I think. And then, of course, the Patriot missile battery. So you've got both offensive, defensive weaponry in the region. You have already, I mean, some could ask the question, has Iran already taken the steps necessary to justify conflict with just their most recent actions? I mean, I would like to hear the U.S. definitively say, and not just hear the reports, but definitively say that these attacks on oil vessels, and now we have new attacks, drone attacks on the oil pipelines that go through Saudi Arabia, which are essential to all of us. I mean, these are attacks on America. This is oil destined predominantly for the United States of America, and for our it impacts our economy, impacts how much you pay at the pump. And the suspicion is that this is absolutely Iran and Iran's proxies. Remember Hezbollah, remember the Houthi rebels in Yemen, remember Assad, who is still in place in Syria pretty strongly. And again, just understand that you're dealing with an entity that is at least poking the dragon. They like to call us the great Satan. I say poking the dragon. So you're poking the United States of America, not just our military. Right now what you're doing is poking our economy. So my question to you today, and we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Do you believe that we're on the brink of a war, or at least some kind of military engagement with Iran directly? 1-800-684-3110. And would you support military action? U.S. military action. That means also putting U.S. men and women in harm's way and people in harm's way. Our ally Israel will take the brunt of Iran's response. But let's be honest. 1-800-684-3110. I want to hear this from you today. I want your thoughts, your opinions. I want to hear from veterans, from people who've got family who are serving active duty. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air today on Jay Sekulow Live. We're going to be taking your calls. I'll be joined by Than Bennett in Washington, D.C., and Skip Ash, who is the head of our military policy and legal program. He'll be joining us as well. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Let's take you to the Persian Gulf right now. Iran attacks, and the U.S. believes Iran was behind the attacks on four vessels, all oil carriers, to the west, working out of with our Gulf allies. So these are some were flagged under UAE, some were flagged, I think, Saudi. These, again, maybe one was a European, although, you know, through the west, bringing oil to the west. This is how we pump our cars up. This is how we fly our planes. This is how we make fuel for so many things. That's just kind of like the basics that everybody can come up with right off the top of their head. And then after that, we sent the USS Abraham Lincoln Carrier Strike Group. And I'll go to skip on this in a moment because some think that this is kind of just like we think of it as a giant aircraft carrier and we don't understand just the amount of what that group means, what a strike group is. It includes submarines. It includes a 4-5 warship. It can include, then you can add to that group by adding, as we also know, has been reported, the USS Arlington joining the group, and that's a troop mover and a lander. It carries the vehicles that can land troops, kind of first soldiers in kind of thing. And has got both amphibious vessels, air vessels as well. On that specific, you've got four B-52 bombers moved to Qatar. You have a Patriot missile batteries that are being installed. It's not a system. It's battery of Patriot missiles. I mean, so let me go to Skip Ash on this initially. Skip is the kind of with your military background, serving all the way for our military at the at the Pentagon, but also being out there deployed as well throughout the world. The idea here, just to set this stage, just paint the picture for everyone listening. When we talk about a carrier strike group being deployed, when we hear about more vessels joining it, like the USS Arlington, which lands Marines, four B-52 bombers, Patriot missile batteries. This is serious hardware, Skip, correct?
Oh, absolutely. What we're trying to do here is there are credible threats being made against our interests, against the United States itself and our interests in the region. And we have the capability in our armed forces to build the armed forces we need or to send in components that we think we might need. That includes an aircraft carrier with its supporting ships, many of which are there for defensive purposes for the aircraft carrier. They carry their own attack aircraft, their own AWACS, so to speak, to be able to direct the aircraft. We also have Air Force aircraft going in there, strategic aircraft that can carry everything up to nuclear arms, should that prove to be desirable. So what we are doing is we are putting in the components. So once we identify what threat we need to meet, we've got the bits and pieces there that we can build the task forces to attack those specific threats. So this is part of saber rattling. Remember, the use of armed forces is a diplomacy by other means. It's normally the last resort. We don't want to do this unless we have to. But it's not the United States that's been turning up the heat. It's been the Iranians turning up the heat by attacking in the region, by threatening Israel, by trying to export terrorism throughout the Arabian Peninsula and throughout the region. And therefore, it has we are responding so that we can meet whatever threat comes against us. So this is a serious thing. We hope it will not go to any type of conflict, but we are able now to meet across the full spectrum of the armed conflict.
There's obviously a concern for U.S. Targets that are direct U.S. targets, Skip. We know that as of this morning, all non-essential staff, and again, that's not supposed to be like a mean word, by the way. I think sometimes people hear that. But it's basically staff that are not ready, that don't have to be there every second of the day or things fall apart immediately, have been ordered out of Iraq. This is a place where we have massive compounds, diplomatic compounds, that are fairly secured. It still can be a tough place to be assigned as a diplomat, but we have that massive green zone still and the massive barricades and walls around that area that to order, Skip, all of the non-essential U.S. Staff out of Iraq from the State Department because of the threat Iran poses, to me, I mean, it just signals that they are, one, our U.S. government's taking the necessary steps to protect those who could be in harm's way, who are Americans, you don't just make these moves to scare another country either. I mean, this is when you're also taking moves to protect lives of your own citizens.
That's absolutely right. When we remove non-essential personnel, we're reducing the footprint we have in that country. Remember the terrorist tactics used by the Iranians go after soft targets. Those are civilians. Those are people who are not walking around carrying weapons. They don't attack the military first. These people go after the civilians and the soft targets, now, which, of course, is in violation of the laws of armed conflict, but these people don't seem to care about that. So we have to take precautions. And when we do publicly and remove these people, we're also saying we rue the threat to be a serious threat. We are taking action by moving military forces in, by reducing the vulnerability of the forces that are there, by removing civilians and so forth. And so we are sending a clear message to the Iranians that we take this seriously. And if they react in the wrong way, they're going to receive a punch in the nose that they will regret.
I want to talk about that in the next segment of the broadcast. What do you think, Skip, this could potentially look like? And then, you know, where we're at. We've had oil vessels bound for the West attacked. We've had drones now used as of this morning. Those appear to have come out of potentially the Houthi rebels somehow. So that would be connected to Iran. Drones used to attack Saudi oil pipelines. So in the desert, there's those pipelines, and they're using military drones to attack pipelines. Ultimately, if you start adding up attacks like this after attacks like this after attacks like this, you put a real concern about the oil supply in the world, especially in the Western world. I mean, that is an attack on all of us. Once it rises to the level, it could ultimately start doing that, by the way, of costing us all more money to whether it is drive your car, fly your plane, run your business, cost of an airline ticket. All of these things. I mean, and that is just like the most basics of using oil. Than, you think Washington, D.C., Capitol Hill is taking this seriously right now? I mean, I hear some talk. The only talk I ever hear about is when you've seen members of Congress pushing State Department officials and others about whether or not, and they don't answer ever because who would? The AUMF that Obama used that was first authorized under Trump would allow action on Iran.
Yeah, I think whether or not a particular member of Congress is taking it seriously, Jordan, depends on whether or not they're viewing this in context. I mean, I think you're going to hear a lot of response from members saying, look, this is just what Iran does. They just provoke. They just saber rattle. But Jordan, those who are more in touch with what is happening and really taking a deeper look, I think are going to look at it in the context of what Iran did last week, openly walking away from their obligations under the JCPOA, the Iran deal. Now, look, you and I have believed for a long time that Iran was never complying with that, that they were always pursuing a nuclear weapon. But now they are out in the open saying that if the European partners to that deal don't renegotiate within 60 days, that they are going to openly pursue that enrichment and that storage capacity. Jordan, I think the members of Congress that are looking at it in that context, along with the context of the intelligence that we got from the Israelis last week, that there were direct threats to U.S. interest in the region, I think those members of Congress believe that these precautionary measures are not only necessary, but that they're absolutely essential, that they're prudent. Jordan, the other observation I would make is, you know, I think Iran has had a lot of engagement with the United States over the decades, and I think they are dealing with a different regime now. I think the president has made it very clear in his dealings with other countries that he means what he says, and when he issues a red line or when he issues an ultimatum, he will be prepared to carry it out if it is not heeded. So I think that's what the president is doing now. He's taking the necessary precautions. He's moving the resources into place. He's removing the U.S. personnel from the regions that would be impacted. And in many ways, Jordan, the ball is now in Iran's hands. The next move to make is theirs. But if they make the wrong move, I will tell you that this commander-in-chief will be ready.
When we come back, we'll hear from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, part of with his discussions with at the G20 or leading up to the G20 with his press conference with his Russian counterpart. And he spoke about Iran directly. And Mike Pompeo talked about what Iran must cease to prevent a conflict. I mean, so, you know, I don't think you can be any more searching for ways not to have to get to conflict. It's always the last resort for the United States of America, not for every country in the world, but for the United States of America, it is. We know the seriousness of sending, whether it's two missiles up in the air or thousands of bombs. We know the seriousness of taking those kind of engagements. We take those very serious in our country. Not all do. So Mike Pompeo is walking through to Iran. What do you need to cease doing right now? Not even like long term, right now, to prevent conflict with the United States so that we don't have to go down that route. You don't have to experience the full force of the U.S. military. 1-800-684-3110 to our callers who are holding. We're going to start taking your phone calls right when we come back from this break. I just wanted to lay this all out for people so that they would fully understand how serious this issue is in Iran and prepare for potential further actions. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture. and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Sandra on Facebook writes in, as long as the current Iranian administration exists, I'll feel like we're always on the verge of war with them. That's always been true to an extent. When you burn our flag in your streets every year and you call out death to America. And by the way, you have been responsible for the death of U.S. troops in the region. I mean, absolutely responsible for the death of U.S. troops in Iraq, places like Syria, backing, again, fighting against the forces we work with. But, I mean, we know you can look on the devices. You can look on the missiles and the systems, Hezbollah's, what had been used in Iraq, some of these Shia insurgent groups, all of these Shia insurgent groups, were being backed with weaponry made in Iran. So I understand that feeling that we've always been on the verge of war with Iran. I think that there are times when we are 10 steps closer. Let's put it that way. I think you could always say on the verge with Iran because, you know, this nuclear power constantly threatening, even like more so sometimes in North Korea, in the way that they threaten the region, the way that they threaten our allies, and what is so important to the U.S., which is our ability to have those trade routes open. Whether it is there's a lot of focus always on the Suez Canal, but the Strait of Hormuz is extremely important. As on one side is Iran, on the kind of northern side of that Strait of Hormuz is Iran. And then you've got to the south and southwest, you have, of course, the Gulf states. And so it's very narrow and very key to oil that is moving out of Saudi Arabia, the oil that's moving out of UAE or using ports that are in the UAE or Qatar. And when vessels that are there that are bound for the West, Western world or bound for the United States are attacked, and the investigations from the U.S. point to this being Iranian Iranian government-organized sabotage. Now we have fairly sophisticated drones. These are not your backyard drones being used to attack. These are basically mini aircraft. And I mean mini in a term that is not that much smaller than a real aircraft that is able to carry military weaponry and is now being used to attack pipelines. And in a sense, they're sending these drones up on like suicide missions. They know that they'll eventually be caught and shot down, but that they can carry out a lot of damage. And of course, it's terrorism as well. It's both physical in the sense that it's violent, and you are infiltrating someone else's territory, so you've violated that rule with weaponry. But you are also committing economic terrorism. We're going to start taking phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We're going to do it right now on the air. Jack is calling from Texas Online 2. Jack, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Jack.
This has been an interesting program, and I just first want to say thank you. I think you're the first I've heard to report the difference between sending a couple aircraft carriers over and actually sending a strike group.
Yeah.
The United States never just sends an aircraft carrier, ever.
Yeah, and I mean, in the news, you know, they show you the picture, Jack, and it's the one, I mean, they're huge, they're giant. I guess people, if they've seen them in person, and I used to live in Norfolk, and that's where Skip is, our office there in Virginia Beach, Virginia, where, I mean, again, you could see these things, and you think, okay, I understand why in the media, the picture, it looks big enough to kind of take care of itself. But that's not how it operates, Jack.
It doesn't operate that way. I've been in the Marine Corps for 20 years. I went to Iraq in 2003, initially pushed off to Iraq, and I can assure you, you don't just have that aircraft carrier. You have another aircraft carrier that has helicopters. I don't want to go and give away the hand of cards of what we do have, but I can promise you this: Iran is playing with a small pair of twos in his poker hand, and we have all the wild cards and all the aces right there. And just a reminder to you and the listeners: there's Marines on that ship.
Yep.
Okay. There are SEALs on that ship. There are sniper teams. I mean, I hope they're listening. If you are, like, you'd better stop what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, Jack, we were talking about that too. I want to thank you for your service to our country, and we really appreciate that. I'm glad you called in, knowing this and undergoing this, you know, explaining it to people, because I do think that if they just see the news reports, it sounds not as massive as if you take a few moments to really think about what we're talking about in human assets, different kinds of aircraft, whether it's bombers or fighter jets and different kinds of fighter jets, different kinds of helicopters, different kinds of amphibian. So we've also got, that's what I wanted to get to, Jack, is the USS Arlington joining the strike group. This is, as you said, a U.S. Marine transporter for amphibious and landing amphibious land and land vehicles, but you know, with special operations soldiers on it. And these are, again, I think, Skip, that kind of ship alone, it sends the signal that, you know, we're ready to utilize human assets as well to take you down if necessary.
Absolutely. You know, at some point in time, when you get serious about certain things, you have to put people on the ground to handle that. When you send these ships that are meant to carry Marine forces over there, that means you're getting serious. And they have the means of getting, of taking those Marines from the ships to shore. And then once they're ashore, they can put out, they can build their own landing strips and everything else on enemy territory. So it's a very flexible force. It's a very significant force. And we've done this for years. We know how to do this. And with all the support from the aircraft carrier itself, with the Naval Air, I mean, you have your own little combined arms team right there, and you can pack a big punch. And just by having that sitting off the coast of Iran sends a very powerful message.
Lucille on Facebook writes in, if a conflict were to break out, who would come to the defense of Iran, or are they isolated? I believe Iran ultimately becomes very isolated, you know, if the U.S. gets involved. So if the U.S. is not involved, Iran can kind of rely on some partners, maybe like Russians to bolster, or used to be the Syrians, but they're not at the point yet to really help. They are fairly isolated in that region. I mean, Hezbollah could take its resources there, but that's a big threat when you're talking about on the land with a country the size of Israel. It is not a big threat when you're talking about the U.S. military fighting back, and they don't have that kind of capabilities. They have Iran's kind of smaller artilleries and missiles being used over to cover a small parcel of land with the state of Israel. So, Skip, I would, you know, ask you this. I mean, but to me, if really this gets to that level, whether it is an air campaign or more, let's leave it at that, kind of an air campaign or more, the Russians seem to leave immediately when that happens, or get out of the way when the U.S. is involved in that. And I don't see them standing up I don't see anyone else standing up to help keep the Ayatollah in place. It will be totally up to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard.
I think what we may see from the Russians is air defense, selling them air defense assets and so forth. But I don't think there are going to be many Russians on the ground other than helping those to keep those assets running. And those would be attacked early on because we want to have air superiority.
So there you go. I mean, Iran in itself, it has a big military. The question is, a lot of that military is conscripted, so you have to join. And then, of course, you have the Revolutionary Guard, which is about 120,000 forces strong. That includes its entire operating system. So, again, that's big, but then in the concept of dealing with the U.S. and the firepower we bring, it doesn't mean no consequences. It doesn't mean that they would not retaliate. But certainly, again, with the saber rattling they're doing, I think they don't think we will. We'll talk about that in the second half hour of the broadcast.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Yesterday, U.S. CENTCOM, Central Command, issued another statement saying that the threat remained credible and that it remained imminent. Now, as the USS Abraham Lincoln Strike Group continues to move towards the Persian Gulf in response to that threat, the Iranian ambassador to the U.K. said the move was a serious miscalculation and accused the U.S. of playing a very dangerous game, claiming it was trying to drag Iran into an unnecessary war.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Yeah, this is interesting. Welcome to the second half hour of Jay Sekulow Live. Larry on Facebook wrote in, do you agree that the reason we're having to deal with this is because of the weakness of previous administrations? Ultimately, some president will have to deal with this. I don't know that it'll be President Trump. Even if he's reelected, he might not have to be the president who takes military action. But ultimately, if the people of Iran continue to allow the Ayatollah and whoever that is next, you know, even if you get to another Ayatollah, Khomeini, however they spell it or talk about it, if you still allow the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, is a better way of saying it, to run Iran and its entire economy, ultimately some president will and their nuclear program continues in some capability, some president of the United States and the Western world will have to deal with Iran and the threat that they pose. The question is, at what point have they crossed lines? And is it possible to respond to Iranian aggression without having to go? So can it be a Gulf War style approach rather than the full on Iraq war that we saw over these last now what 13 years nearly 13 14 years? So I mean, yeah, that's that question. Can it be a shorter form conflict even with some ground forces? Potentially, or because how does Iran? I'm saying this because, and I'll go to Skip. Ask Skip if you do have to get into a conflict with Iran, they will retaliate. They can launch missiles at our troops in the region and the aircraft carriers that we have. These are not long distances. We certainly have defensive capabilities. So does Israel, but they will respond, and that kind of retaliation also then requires response from the U.S. And so do you think that if a conflict begins, it can be done in the quicker style and that this if for a better sense of term, neuter Iran and their capabilities for a period of time?
I'm not privy to some of the intelligence stuff, but I would say this. The Iranians have the Revolutionary Guards because they need someone they can depend upon. So it's the Revolutionary Guards that need to be neutered. They need to be destroyed.
Yep.
The regular armed forces are not well done, and there have been some who have suggested that if we came to the point that we had to attack and actually go after the Iranians, that you leave the army intact pretty much and go after the Revolutionary Guards. If they're destroyed, the basis for the regime is destroyed, and then you could say, okay, now the military, you come back and you rebuild Iran the way you want to, because there's so much resistance to the way the government's being run now, spending money on the Syrians and everything else, that they're saying, why don't you spend money on us? The reason where our economy's in shambles is because you're doing all these adventures outside the country, yeah, and you're inviting the U.S. response. If you acted like a civilized nation and was concerned about Iran by itself, then the United States would leave them alone, and I think that's true.
This is why I'm glad we have people like Skip Ash on our broadcast, and we can all be in different locations, and because you have to think pretty deeply, understand also the military aspects of this, because I think for most people they hear, well, you could leave a military side, but when you think about it with Iran, you think about a lot of those military men who are conscripted into service, forced into service. They are not well organized. They're not getting well treated. They probably don't have. But it's not like being in the Iranian Revolutionary Guard where it increases your bank account. That you could basically say, move to the side, don't get into it with us, and then we're going to allow you to come in and with the resources and rebuild your own country. Again, folks, it gives you where the options would be that would not put us in that Iraq situation, the long-term trying to rebuild and all these different factions. So again, we're going to take your phone calls. We come back. That's what we're going to do. It's almost going to be like two final segments almost, because we've got so many great calls and questions coming in. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. We'll be right back.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Jay Sekulow Live. Right before we go to our calls, I want to go play that soundbite from Mike Pompeo when he was speaking at the news conference after meeting with the Russian foreign minister before he met with Putin, which we just got photos from. But this is the press conference they did. He got asked directly about what does like Iran need to do to prevent a conflict. And it honestly isn't some of these are all pretty short-term things. So it's not like the U.S. is saying you need to totally reform your human rights, totally reform your system of government. This is the short-term needs to prevent a conflict. Take a listen.
We fundamentally do not seek a war with Iran. We're looking for the regime to simply stop conducting assassination campaigns throughout Europe, to cease their support of Hezbollah that threatens interests all across the Middle East, their support for the Houthis that are launching missiles into areas where there are Russians and Americans traveling. These missiles could easily kill a Russian or an American.
So there you go. I mean, you're looking at the assassination campaigns, support for Hezbollah, support for the Houthi rebels in Yemen, who are launching missiles into areas where he said there's not just Americans traveling, but Russians, and that those missiles could kill a Russian or American, thus escalating into a more serious conflict right there. But he also ended the statement with this.
We've also made clear to the Iranians that if American interests are attacked, we will most certainly respond in an appropriate fashion.
That is a question, I guess, right before I get to the calls, I do want to go back to Skip Ashon. And Skip, you were talking about, we talked about kind of, and I want to do this again for our audience, that one of these next two segments, kind of like what it could look like in a conflict with Iran and who to focus on and what there's actually part of an Iranian military you believe you could leave in place to rebuild the country. But what would American interest be? I mean, that is a fairly broad term, right? Right, Skip? I mean, American interest could be the oil tankers, I would believe, or the pipelines that are maybe Saudi, but it's oil destined for the United States that could be caught up with U.S. business interest and certainly affects our economy. So, I mean, leaving it fairly broad there, because obviously the United States government believes there's a serious threat to U.S. interest and American interest from Iran in that region specifically of the world.
Yeah, what our interests would be, we want to maintain the free flow of oil from that region. The Iranians have said that they have threatened to block the Straits of Hormuz. If they were to do that, that would block the flow of oil, because most oil is done on those huge tankers, and if they can't get through the Straits of Hormuz, that would be a catastrophe for the world economy. Moreover, we want to protect the stability of the Sunni kingdoms on the in the region. So we want to make sure that the Sunnis remain strong because they're a stabilizing force right now. And obviously, we want to protect the state of Israel. So those are our interests. Now, I think the biggest one right now would be the threat to Israel and the threat to the free flow of oil. So one of the first things I think we would do if that threat were to realize itself would be to destroy those the small boats that the they also have ground to sea missiles. They have missiles that would be used to attack our ocean going fleet, our navy. So those would be the first two things I think that would probably be attacked by our forces.
So it's the fast boats, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard's fast boats in the Persian Gulf that they utilized to harass. That's how they captured those Navy seamen on that. They were on kind of a small vessel themselves, and then they one of those fast boats showed up, and they were told not to engage in a conflict. And then Iran took them hostage, those troops. And then so be taking out the Iranian fast boats, and then their sea to land. Or land to sea, missiles and kind of defenses, systems that would be used against our strike group that's there and the vessels that we have in the Persian Gulf. Let's go right to the phones. We do have so many calls in 1-800-684-3110. Tina's calling from Texas. She's been holding on a long time. Let's make sure like people like Tina and we'll get to Scott next. Get a book too. Tina, you're on the air.
Hi, Jordan.
Hey, Tina.
Just my perspective, okay? We are no longer on an apology tour. What President Trump is doing by moving some of these major military forces into the region harkens back to the immortal words of President Reagan, peace through strength. America never got involved in a war because we were too strong.
No. The truth is, listen, I mean, we have to continue to rebuild our military. That's not 100% done, but by putting the money in, you can quickly get what you need ready for a conflict like this if necessary. And obviously, you've got your long-term planning as well, your major planning to rebuild in the technology that's there as well. So I think that you're absolutely right, though. The stronger we are, the more likely it is that Iran will talk tough but not take one of these actions that Skip talked about, which is actually disrupting fully, I mean, really shutting down the free flow of oil. Not necessarily a tanker here or a pipeline there, which is kind of the steps pre to that, but shutting down the Straits of Hormuz, which is an act of war, would be an act of war. And not just for the United States, but for also then, as Skip said, you know, you're protecting Israel is very important, but also stabilizing the Sunni kingdoms and the Gulf states. They would not be stable if there is no free flow of oil. So you quickly, all three of those major U.S. interests, American interests, can be caught up together depending on what action Iran takes. I think it's less and less likely Iran takes those kind of actions, but not rational. I mean, the truth is we're not dealing with rational actors. Let's go to Scott in Colorado on line 5. Scott, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Okay, Jordan, thanks for my call. Yeah, kind of agree with the previous caller. I do not know if what the actions were taken will lead to a military action, but what I do believe is what President Trump is doing is a necessary second step. Withdrawing from the Iran deal was a first step in reconfiguring this world to a correct sense of right and wrong. I know liberals are kind of putting this as an extreme military posture, as an un-American, as though we're some kind of extreme terrorist in what we're doing. But, you know, essentially, I think you have one of two options. You can be liked or you can be respected. You know, it gets back to a philosophical difference with the previous 8 years. Yeah. I believe the Biden administration wanted to be liked. They looked at the world as one big Facebook button, wanted to be liked.
I like that.
No matter how much we gave them.
Yes, I like I like your O'Biden in there, Scott. I will have to. I'm going to note this right now too. Biden is I said Romneying. I said yesterday, which is what Biden would be like for the Democrats in this election cycle. So O'Biden is a good one, and the O'Biden administration. I mean, and it's also a fair criticism of that administration because they were dumping money to Iran. You know, people ask like, what, you know, was it the actions? We got that question, Scott. You know, was it the actions of that previous administration? Well, I mean, certainly if you start giving people billions and then you take those billions away, which was a danger of every Obama policy, like deferred action things, things like that. And I mean, so it goes domestically to internationally. When you take actions that are kind of these unilateral, that are easy for our next president to reverse, that don't take court cases and don't take even acts of Congress, and Iran was used to getting billions and billions from the U.S. and basically having its economy open up, and then boom, Donald Trump gets elected president. Uh-oh, our economy's worse now than it ever was. You know, we have more sanctions to face, and at the same time, you know, Harry, you talk about the economic side. We are budget, the Trump budget that moved through Congress ultimately was mostly about our military.
Absolutely. So there was a significant increase in military spending that's highly necessary. I think the United States, as the caller correctly points out, is no longer prepared to apologize for American interests. We are no longer going to be an open door for a craven terror-ridden regimes like Iran to move their interest ahead of the United States. And so I think if we go back, for instance, to the 1973 Israeli-Arab conflict, Moshe Dayan famously said that the Egyptians will soon learn that the road from Cairo to Tel Aviv leads from Tel Aviv to Cairo. And I believe President Trump is essentially saying that the road from Tehran to Washington, D.C. leads from D.C. to Tehran. We will continue to impose strict and maximum sanctions on Iran. We will build up our military. We will respond to threats. And there's clear evidence on the ground that Tehran was behind the attacks on tankers in the Persian Gulf.
We will take more of your phone calls when we come back. 1-800-684-3110. If you've been holding on the line for Zach, for Pat, for Carol, I know we took a few there, we will get to your calls right off the top. And we're going to go right to calls. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I just want people to understand, because, you know, we got these kind of comments coming in. We can talk about more if people want to. But Danny on Facebook wrote, and Jordan, don't you think Iran will eventually just back down? Not rational. You know, when you get religiously motivated plus economically motivated and you kind of mix those two together. So this extreme version of Shia Islam, their own version, which is 12er Shia Islam, in times that they've got to cause, it gets pretty dangerous and not rational. We'll be back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
talking to Iran, the buildup, the strike group, the B-52 bombers. I mean, I know you've seen the basic news. We wanted to dive deeper today. We'll continue as necessary, too, as the news presents itself. We've got a great team ready in place if there is any conflict. You see that now with people like Skip Ash, with Than in Washington, D.C., with Andy, and with Harry here. I mean, and we've got more. You know, Wes Smith, who's not in today, also with his long service to our country and deployments. Again, we've got the team in place for this broadcast, ready to really break it down for you if we are on a path to potential conflict, and certainly putting the pieces in motion. Because when you start telling your staff leave, when you say to the non-essential diplomatic staff in Iraq, so just bordering Iran, that you need to go out of our green zone, which is fairly protected, and out of any of our other offices throughout that entire country and locations where we may have other representative consulates and things like that, you must go because of what's happening in Iran. That is very serious. 1-800-684-3110. Zach has been holding on for a long time. And Zach, I did this because I wouldn't have time to get into your call. Welcome. You're on the air, Zach, calling from Massachusetts. Here you go.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Zach.
I just want to offer a counterpoint to what a lot of people have been saying. In my opinion, we have no business in the Middle East, and it gets worse every time we go there. I mean, it's part of why Iran's a mess in the first place. We overthrew their parliamentary government 50 years ago, which led to the situation we have now. Getting involved there is going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars, if not $1 trillion, just like Iraq. It's going to cost thousands of lives. And frankly, we don't need the oil. And why would we defend Saudi Arabia?
Does defend more than you think, more than we kind of want to acknowledge sometimes. And I get it. I mean, there's a lot of problems with Saudi Arabia, especially domestically. But they allow U.S. troops to be there. They're the reason why we're the most powerful country in the world. You did say something that was interesting. Listen, I get the weariness. I think President Trump would agree with you a lot, actually, that the last thing you want to do is do this. I mean, he said this. He's not someone who did not support the Iraq war. And he's been very clear. He doesn't support the nation building. Now, we talked about it. This is a good opportunity to talk about with Skip again, how this could look very differently right from the start. That if things fall into place. I will say this, so Zach, you said we have no business being there. And it's interesting that you use that term because we have a whole lot of business there, Harry. A whole lot of business.
Absolutely.
I mean, a whole lot of the U.S. economy is, and I don't know what he's talking about with the we don't need the oil either, because it affects the whole world's price.
Absolutely.
And it also is our counter to Iran and at Russia to some extent with the natural gas.
Absolutely. So imagine a world without Middle Eastern oil.
Huh.
Imagine the prices.
And without Venezuela, because that's also
sanctioning
that.
So that means that the price that the American people pay for petroleum will rise, because even though we are producing abundant energy in the United States, then producers in the United States will have an incentive to do what? To send the oil abroad. Yep. If they can garner a premium price. So it's very, very important in terms of understanding the world economy to understand that the world economy, lives to some extent on oil. And that brings me to the second point, which is we also have to understand the immense geopolitical consequences of non-involvement in the Middle East, starting with the nation state of Israel, our most reliable ally in the Middle East. And this could lead to destabilization with respect to the Sunni kingdoms. And this could lead to a wider conflict, which could then engulf much of Asia and much of Africa. So the United States provides a stabilizing force in the Middle East, but we should also remember that the current administration is committed to drawing down our troop levels as much as possible. And we have made progress in that direction in Syria and Iraq, and we're planning to do the same in Afghanistan. So I think it's clear beyond question that the United States is moving in the right direction, and we should also keep in mind that the originating threat – for 9/11 with Osama bin Laden originated where? In the Middle East. So we have to be prepared to go after enemies wherever they are.
Pat in New Mexico on line four. Pat, I know we covered some of your question, but you've been holding a long time. You might have more to ask too that's differently, and sure if we need to clarify as well. So Pat, calling from New Mexico, line four, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking me, Colin. Yes, you did clarify a lot for me because my understanding was Trump said we were oil independent, but
I think that's true for like our basic needs, like Harry said, and Pat, I'm going to let you talk again, so you don't drop. But that's true, Harry, for our basic day to day needs. But it's all impacted because if the oil is not moving around the world, then I mean we're not just talking about our domestic supply anymore.
I think that's correct. So oil is a fungible good, meaning that if the Middle Eastern supply dries up tomorrow, then oil prices in the United States and Canada will skyrocket. And that certainly could mean good news for people that own stock in petroleum companies, yeah. But it would be bad news for the American consumer.
Yeah, and we'd also have probably a security interest in shipping it out overseas, too. We'd have to get our allies, you know, oil. That's part of it. That's part of having a NATO alliance is making sure they're able to operate as well. Pat, do you have more to add?
Oh, I was just saying back in the 70s, I remember that we had the technology and capability for electric cars, but then the oil lobby was heavy lobbied against that. So I'm just wondering, moving forward, we could explore that or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, the electric cars work. I mean, there have already been small companies that have been able to produce fairly reliable electric cars, not on long, long distances. So, I mean, tougher if you're doing mass, big transport, but it's coming. It's certainly coming, but it doesn't that, you know, we talk about cars, we talk about even planes, and we're not there with planes. Okay, so we're not there with planes, and there's a whole lot of other industries that need oil, Harry.
Well, speaking of electric cars, we still need fossil fuel to generate the electricity. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, we also live in an era where there has been a push to reduce dependence, for instance, on nuclear power, which would provide a nice option. So, for instance, in France, up to 90% of the electricity in France is generated by nuclear power. But again, there are lobbies who are opposing that. And I don't think we can still depend on windmills and the sun for our electricity.
All right, folks. It was a deep show. I want to skip just briefly. You brought up this point of how it looks different than Iraq. I know we got 50 seconds here, but you said we could actually leave the normal Iranian military in place potentially, just take out the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, which is 100,000 of their 500,000 troops, and allow that military to then rebuild the country instead of ours.
Yeah, I think they had the Revolutionary Guards to keep the current regime in power. They did that just like the Nazis did. They had to have a separate army for the regime because they didn't trust the regular army. They don't trust the regular army, and therefore the regular army probably is closer to the people and better able to put the country back together if the Revolutionary Guards are destroyed.
All right, folks. We got into a day with Iran. We might, we'll see what happens. We'll certainly be coming back to it and continue to deep dive into it for all of our audience. We will talk to you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.